Accessing library computer data.
And to make sure history never forgets the name Enterprise.
Hey everybody, welcome back to the Penske File. Continuing our Let's Watch the Star Trek The Next Generation, we're up to Season 2. We made it all the way to Season 2. And this episode is called The Child. This is the first episode of the second season, obviously. It was directed by Rob Bowman. The story credit goes to Jerron Summers, John Povill, and Maurice Hurley. It aired way back on November 21st, 1988. This is the episode where ship counselor Deanna Troi gives birth to a mysterious child while the Enterprise transports a dangerous cargo. We're going to be joined by Amy for this one, and we will get to talking about the child with all its positives and many negatives right after this.
Captain's log, stardate 42073.1. There has been an outbreak of an unclassified plasma plague in the Rochellis system. We're on an emergency run to collect specimens of the deadly plague and transport them to Science Station Tango Sierra, where, hopefully, an antidote can be produced.
Hey everybody, welcome back. Let's get to discussing the child. I'm joined this time by Amy. How are you?
Hey everyone. Good.
You enjoyed that episode very much?
No, not at all. Feeling the same.
It
was terrible.
Yeah, I sort of felt it's an episode that, like, as I watch with other people, I feel sort of bad. Like, it's how sort of dumb the whole thing is. It's like a super cringy episode. A lot of stuff goes horribly wrong. But I thought to start off, we'd just go through the changes that happened in the second season so far.
Yeah, facial hair.
Yep. So Riker has a beard, which is a big change.
And I think Worf has new facial hair.
Yep.
I don't think his goatee was there last
season. I think
season.
His goatee, he definitely has a new sash.
Yeah.
He might have new facial hair. Riker has a beard, which is a big to-do in the Trek universe.
Yeah. LaForge's chief engineer.
Yep. Geordi's chief engineer. And him and Worf are both wearing yellow tunics now instead of the red that they were wearing.
Oh, yeah.
So that's new.
Yep.
10 Ford exists, which didn't exist in the first season.
That's the bar?
The bar, yeah. And okay. It's headed by Guinan, who's played by Whoopi Goldberg, and Guinan would be around until the sixth season, I think. She makes a bunch of appearances. And the other main thing that you noticed when the credits rolled, what was it that you saw?
Yeah, no more Dr. Crusher. Yep. I was devastated.
Yep.
I was waiting for her name to show up. Never did.
Yeah, Gates McFadden is no longer a part of the cast for this season. And she's instead replaced by Diana Muldar. I think that's her name.
I'll
double check that as it goes through. But she is she's Dr. Pulaski. So, I mean, all the other changes going into the second season are kind of cosmetic. And if they're not cosmetic, it's like Geordi has a new job. You know, Riker has a beard, Guinan exists, and there's a bar on the ship. Nothing here is really, you know, important in terms of story, but Dr. Pulaski is kind of important in terms of story because she's the main cast member. So what'd you think of Dr. Pulaski?
I thought she was awful. Unless they do some major writing improvements, she's just the stiffest, most...
You think she's stiff?
Unfeeling doctor ever.
She's unfeeling.
It's like she doesn't... There's no emotion.
No.
From her. Unless is that what they want? Because she's supposed to be like a foil to Crusher?
She's supposed to, I mean, so the big thing is that she came in seemingly unwilling, not unwillingly, but she's not sort of buying into this because, you know, she wasn't listed as a cast member. She's credited as a guest star.
Okay.
And she does that through the whole season that she's involved. And that was at her recommendation. I guess she didn't want to be considered part of the cast. So I don't know how much long she was intending on staying. And she obviously doesn't stay very long. She only stays for the season. But, she was originally conceived, I think, to be a Bones McCoy type character of the original series.
Okay.
Where Dr. McCoy is sort of crotchety, you know, and gets into disagreements with Spock, who is the logic character that Data is kind of representing here.
But it's not, I don't know, it's like she doesn't have a personality at all.
I think she has a personality. I think her personality is that she's a huge bitch. And it comes across mostly to, cause she's exceptionally cruel to Data for no particular reason. You know what I mean?
Data, look at this.
Data.
What?
My name. It is pronounced Data.
Oh?
You called me Data.
What's the difference?
One is my name. The other is not.
See, I didn't get cruelty or bitchiness from her. Because even when they have a little disagreement about how she pronounces his name, she calls him Data.
Yeah.
And he corrects her. It seems almost like this more playful, lighthearted thing. I didn't get it. I didn't get anything. Unless, other than that weird comment when Data is accompanying Deanna to help her with the labor, and she's like, you know, Deanna needs the warm, compassionate touch of a human, not the cold, unfeeling presence of technology. And it's like, that was like the only weird thing, but it's like she doesn't come across as bitchy. If she was bitchy, it'd be more interesting to watch her, but it's just really cringy to watch her.
I think she comes across as, I'm probably like tainted by knowing her later on things,
maybe,
but
yeah.
I mean, she doesn't report, you know, immediately. Picard has that big thing about, he's like, where, he asks where she is and the computer's like, she's in 10 forward, or sickbay tells him that. And so she's up, she's not giving him respect. She doesn't check in with him.
Okay.
She's sort of cruel to Data, which would be a running theme, which is really the main reason that the fans of the show don't like her as much, because this sort of thing of her and Data continues for her, like, entire existence. You know, as the show is trying to make great strides to be like, Data's a person. He's like an individual. He's more than just a machine.
Which she points out.
How?
When she scans him after he corrects her name, what she called him, she scans him and she says, I forget exactly what she says, but she's like, incredible. But, you know, you have bruised feelings.
But it's she's being sarcastic to him because he doesn't actually have bruised feelings. You know, she scans him and says, yeah, is it possible for all your like pistons and motors that you actually have a bruised feeling? She's being sarcastic about it because he actually doesn't. That's why she refuses to call him the right name. She never corrects herself. So she just keeps being sort of mean to him. Because he doesn't feel hurt, she can get away with it.
She can just do it because he doesn't care. Okay.
But that's Dr. I mean,
I guess I just did not get anything from her character this episode. I just did not think it was well acted or poorly written.
Yeah, she's,
I don't know.
She's unenthusiastic, but I was surprised by how much she's actually involved in this one. And she's hugely different from Dr. Crusher. She's like,
yes, Dr. Crusher is empathetic and compassionate.
But I also think Crusher is sort of a zero of a character. Like, Pulaski is actually a character. She's just horribly unlikable and doesn't really fit in the tone of the show. Where Crusher is much more bland, but much less upsetting. Like, she seems to be more like a realistic doctor type figure.
Yeah.
But her story, like, her as a character is much more, like, you don't get anything out of her. Pulaski, on the other hand, is, unlikable, but sort of,
But she didn't really solve anything. I guess I could agree with you if she, you know, was the one to make the discovery as to what was going on, but she really didn't. Everyone was just really passive in this episode.
Yeah. No, I mean, yeah. So we can just go into that. Like, the basic plot is that Deanna Troi gets impregnated by an alien, has a baby real quick, and the Enterprise is transporting a plague samples to another planet so they can make a vaccine from it, or another space station or whatever. And then the baby is threatening the security measures that are put in place to prevent the plague from getting out onto the ship, and the baby decides to leave. and that's it.
Yeah. The baby you know, made of this radiation that counteracts Geordi's
security measures.
Yeah.
Yep. So, I just wanted to give a short bit of history about where this episode came from. So the second season of Star Trek was still, it came out at the same time that the writer's strike that ended the first season was still going on. So people weren't allowed to write new scripts for television shows. So what they did was they took a script from a show called Star Trek Phase 2, which was a failed Star Trek series. and they rewrote it and repurposed it for Next Generation purposes. So it's a show from another show with different characters, and they just rewrote it to use these characters instead and insert Pulaski into it and then go on from there. So.
Interesting.
So it's not, you're not starting off the new season with like quality or anything. Like the script is not, written under the best situation. They're sort of rushed. The producers are, hassled with this whole sort of thing.
Yeah. Nothing gets accomplished in this episode.
No, it's a bad.
Except now I know that I'm stuck with Wesley Crusher for the duration of the show, which is unfortunate.
Yeah, so we can get Wesley's thing. We'll get the minor stupid stuff out of the way first. So I actually don't mind Guinan.
No, I like Guinan. She's a good – I mean, her acting is good. Like yep. For – I don't know. Her sage-like character kind of works.
Yep. She's the wise bartender type, or the mysterious bartender.
Yeah.
She has a couple horrible scenes with Will Wheaton as Wesley Crusher in here, as he's trying to figure out his path about what he wants to do, and she gives vague advice about how to, figure out his lot in the world. But other than that, I like Guinan as a character. She sticks around for a while. Whoopi Goldberg's effective as her.
Yep.
You don't really get too much out of her, but she's very important in a few of the, upcoming episodes of Star Trek, like Yesterday's Enterprise and everything like that. But I do like Guinan. She guides Wesley into this, and at the end of this show, Wesley Crusher has decided to stick around and not go to Starfleet Academy. I think that's what he was avoiding. I think he's not going to the Academy.
Or going to be with his mother, who's...
She's on Earth.
Head of medical at Starfleet.
Yeah, yeah.
So I think...
Yeah, they've written...
She wanted Wesley to be with her there.
They've written Beverly Crusher out, and she is now head of Starfleet Medical. And so I think Wesley was either going to see her or he was going to the Academy or something like that. But anyway, he's now stuck on the Enterprise for another year because he asked Picard to let him stay, and Picard said yes. Outside of that, there is the plague transport, which is okay.
What I wish they did in this episode was focused on the plague.
Yeah. Like,
that would have been interesting. Except it's just this side note.
Mm-hmm.
And then we get distracted by Deanna's weird pregnancy, which she plays no part in whatsoever. Her character is totally underutilized in this episode.
Yeah, well, her character is, pointless. But, I mean, the plague thing is really just I think they call it a MacGuffin, where it's something that exists just to cause... narrative issues. Yeah. And that's really all this is, because they're just transporting something that they don't really examine at all. And they're just moving it from one place to another. And the A plot, which is Troy's kid, is causing this to be a problem. So the MacGuffin of the plague exists just to give sort of a narrative drive to the plot and to create a sense of conflict that otherwise wouldn't really be there. And it's dumb. The doctor who's like in charge of it seems retarded. He doesn't seem to be able to control anything that goes on. They're like, didn't you scan for this? He's like, I did. It wasn't here. And he looks terrible in his blue.
He does. Uniform. He looks terrible. He's like sloppy, and he has like crazy eyes, and has like no idea. You just get the sense that he doesn't know how to control these specimens at all.
Yeah,
you don't really trust him.
And they've built like a big metal box to keep the plague samples in, and they're basically just scanning it with tricorders, and he is on board sort of overseeing this whole thing, and it doesn't make a lot of sense. His character is dumb. Pulaski interferes with them a couple times. Riker and Data show up to like knock on the machine, and they're surprised that something can get out of it, which was weird. It's fine for what it is. It's just a silly MacGuffin kind of plot that drives nothing anywhere. So we can get to the meat of this one, which is the A plot, which is where the title of the episode comes from. The episode is called The Child, and it is about the rape and then birth of Troy and her emotional sadness about having a kid and the kid dying. So this episode gets a lot of flack from the writing standpoint of it's like, not like feminist critique, but if, like, So a feminist critique of this has a huge problem with the way that Troy's character is treated in it.
I agree.
It's bizarre, and it's also, it happens very quickly. Like, she gives birth and has a kid, and he grows up and dies within the course of like 2 days, something like that.
Yeah.
And she is attached to it as though they've been together for a decade, you know? But I mean, to get back to the main feminist problem is that, not feminist problem, but the, I mean, it's true. It's a bad story problem that the show has where Troy is, like you were saying, completely uninvolved in this pregnancy.
Yeah. Like, she is the one holding this baby. She has to give birth to this baby, putting herself in more danger than anyone else.
Mm-hmm.
And no one's concerned about her either. Like, everyone's just like Riker, you don't even see Riker's face on the screen. It's like this offhanded comment. Riker's like, is there any danger to Troy, like, possibly in this birth? And
that's the scene where when Picard brings this to everybody's attention, it's a weird scene because you have a bunch of guys and the doctor talking about what they're going to do with
nobody
the baby.
Nobody asked Deanna what she feels about the situation.
I don't mean to be indelicate, but who's the father?
Last night, while I slept, something which I can only describe as a presence entered my body.
A life form of unknown origin and intent is breeding right now inside Counselor Troy.
Even though she's quote-unquote the counselor who should have more insight into things than anyone else, but again, her character doesn't make any sense.
Yep.
Yeah, she's just sitting there without any input whatsoever. Nobody cares what she's doing. And then you just have this terrifying fetus, like, floating around in the,
on the view screen.
In the background.
Yeah, they keep showing and pictures of the baby because it's growing at an astronomical rate or something. And yeah, it's like you're saying that it's a bunch of men sort of arguing about what's best for everyone else to do with this baby. Should they abort the fetus? Should, you know, all this? And then Deanna pipes in. She's like, no, I'm keeping the child.
And the way that the scene starts, it's immediately antagonistic to Troy because Picard sits down and it didn't seem Picard-like either. He sits down and he looks pissed and he's like, Counselor Troy's pregnant. And everyone just immediately thinks that she was sleeping around. And Riker is just like, who's the father?
Yeah,
clearly it's like, unfortunately, Riker, it's not you.
You can never tell if Riker is jealous in this or whatever, but yeah.
I think he's jealous because he's attached to Deanna. That's clear.
Then it's never brought up. It's only through his like acting of sort of being upset about what's gone on. But people are.
It was a really uncomfortable scene. I did not like how that was. And I didn't like how that was at all.
I feel the whole episode makes me kind of cringy. The whole thing kind of leaves me like uncomfortable. It's an unsettling idea, especially when Picard and Pulaski go in to meet the kid as he's older. It's like this eerie, bizarre scene. And it's made that way because Troy is not reacting in any sort of normal way that like a person who, like, if you got pregnant and you gave birth a day later and you'd be like, oh, this is my child. It's like, you were essentially raped, right?
Right. Yeah.
You were raped and you're impregnated with a kid and you give birth to him the next day and he's aging at a super high rate of speed and you're still like, oh, Ian, why is she so attached to this kid? You know, it's not even like the plot goes out of its way to be like she's being manipulated by the alien to take care of it.
Yeah. Or like mind controlled or something.
Yeah. She's just of her own free will.
Yeah. It's just this nurturing maternal side, very feminine. And also the thing that I also can't figure out is the labor was totally painless.
Sorry,
it was the labor scene is really weird because she's just deep breathing. It looks enjoyable in some ways. Like, it doesn't look like it's painful at all.
You thought she was orgasming.
Well, it had that kind of feel to it. Don't you think?
No, it did. I don't know what the point of that was. Like, besides, everything about this baby is very easy. Like, it never has any problems. She doesn't feel sick at all. They were curious, like, how do you feel? And she's like, I should feel bad, but I feel wonderful.
Which is so weird because the whole point of this life form coming on to the Enterprise was to experience life as humans experience it.
Right, but it's changing everything about, like, the experience.
Yeah, it's not human at all.
Right, yeah.
But then they try to make it. But they try to make her love for him feel very real, and it's just so contrived.
Yeah. No, yeah, because it's way too fast.
Yeah.
She has no attachment to this kid.
And why should she? The kid is devoid of any kind of... He's terrifying. His black, vacant eyes.
Like, his beady little eyes.
Yeah, it's like... There's absolutely nothing endearing about this child at all. Everything is stiff.
Yep.
Which makes sense. I mean, it's not human.
Right. But her reaction to it does not make sense in the context of that. And everyone else is kind of upset by it, but not enough to be like, this is... a huge problem.
Yeah, Picard, after Deanna gave birth, it was obviously hours had passed, and he was like, oh, well, better go check on Deanna.
Well, he only goes to check because, I forget why,
the doctor comes to the bridge.
Oh, that's right, yeah.
And she tells him that it's suspicious. And he's like, oh, right, let me pay my respects.
And he walks in, and the kid is 4 years old, and it's only been a day.
And it's terrifying.
And he's, and the kid is like somewhat, more aware of the situation. Like it knows why it's there, but it won't tell people. And Troy does not seem particularly interested in getting to the truth of why this kid is there.
Nor can Troy gain any insight into the kid's otherness.
Yep.
That might, help us understand. Her character just.
Troy's.
Oh, yeah. It kills me.
Yep.
It totally kills me. She is the only one seemingly who could have any insight into these kinds of situations, yet she never has any insight into them.
Yep.
She's just this... Yeah, this episode. The best part of this episode were the golden retriever puppies in the daycare center. I'll give this episode a D- just because of those puppies.
Yeah, he's playing with little golden retriever puppies in a hexagon of death or something. He's either ultimate fighting them or he's playing with them or something. And it's just, I'm so torn because there's a lot of especially as we've just watched all the first season episodes, there's a lot of the cool stuff where it now feels like a Next Generation episode, or at least people are in the right positions. Yeah. Interactions are kind of making sense. Riker has a beard. Ten Forward exists. Guinan exists. And on top of it, you just have this stupid plot that goes nowhere. And this might be one of the worst shows of Star Trek that I can think of. It's almost more blatantly offensive than any of the bad first season ones, where at least it's in Code of Honor, I don't know if you watched that episode. Is it Code of Honor?
I think you watched that with Clay.
Code of Honor is the one where they have the alien race that's tribal, and they cast all black people as the alien race. So it's the script itself isn't racist, but I don't know why you cast all these people as all these black people to play this alien race that's tribal warriors or whatever. This one is more even the script seems stupid.
Yeah, and they just can't. I don't know what happens in later seasons, but I just really hope they start writing female characters better.
Yeah.
It seems like they're doing something good with Guinan.
Guinan. And I think we disagree. I mean,
maybe I have to watch more of Dr. Pulaski, but I did not find her performance intriguing at all.
No, I'd agree with that.
I didn't. If she at least was smart and matched wits with Picard at some point, then I could see, okay, I'm fine with her being an antagonistic counterpart. But that's not what she is.
They had that awesome scene where Picard's going through the whole thing. He's like, beam this dangerous plague on board and put it in its special security thing, because if it gets out, it'll kill everyone. And they have the Data. She calls him Data. Pulaski's sitting with Data, and she's like, Captain. He's like, yes. She's like, I just want you to know everyone will die if this plague gets out. And he goes, he should have just been like, yeah, I know.
Yeah,
I know.
Shit, Sherlock. That's why Geordi made that floating box.
I'm aware. And her response is just like, yeah, I just wanted you to know.
But again, FYI. That kind of encapsulates what this episode is. It's just a bunch of things that go absolutely nowhere.
Yeah. And then we were also laughing, and just to tie in with the very end, where Geordi's like, well, thank God we got this plague and we can get a cure. And the guy's like, yeah, maybe we can't get a cure. And then he just beams out.
No, it's like, do you guys think you're going to be able to get a vaccine? And the doctor's like, I don't know if we'll ever get a vaccine. And LaForge is like, so all of this could have been in vain? And the doctor just knocks him on the shoulder and goes, I sure hope not.
And then beams out of there.
And then the episode just ends. And it's like, this is so dumb.
And that didn't make any sense. What was the point of that?
No, no point at all.
Just say we've developed a cure and we've saved a million lives, and everyone would be fine with that. It's just so
It goes nowhere. Yeah, Deanna's character isn't the least bit developed as a result of this.
No, which is shocking because this episode is about her.
It's all about her, yet she probably has the fewest lines.
Yeah, she doesn't say much.
Everyone. She doesn't say anything. Yeah. She just has wide eyes the whole time and is just completely... And just, I can't stand it when... So when, okay, so the last scene, when the child leaves...
Yep, when he just commits, oh he my commits gosh. Suicide.
He just commits suicide, and and he's just like, oh God, I'm putting the ship in danger, and of course Deanna has no idea where the danger is coming from. Like she has no clue, and so he has to explain to her that he has to go, and then all of a sudden she goes, no, you can't go, and then he just dies.
Yep, he just shuts off,
and then he turns into a beam of light, and then Deanna holds it in her hands, and then he just explains the plot to her silently, and then she re-explains it.
And
to
then
us,
she explains it to the audience,
which I cannot stand.
Yep, and that's a real bad thing that Star Trek's been doing.
That is such bad writing.
Yep, it's horrible.
He is a life force entity. When we passed each other in space, he was curious about us. So he decided the best way to learn was to go through the process. To be born, to live as one of us, and in that way to understand us. He never meant any harm.
There was a moment when you smiled.
He said, "Thank you." I told him we will miss him.
Yeah, she literally just like...
She's like, oh, he wanted to get life experience, so he entered my body so he could get experience.
So he raped me, and then I gave birth to him, and then he died.
And he says, thank you.
And she's like, I told him we'll think about him. And everyone
like, we'll
is
miss
like...
him. It's like, we won't miss his radiation. Like, what?
Won't miss the alien's been there for 24 hours. No one feels anything for him. And it makes her look like a moron.
Yeah.
Because everyone else in the, you know, everyone else is like looking at each other through the sides of their eyes like, what the fuck is going on?
Nobody comforts her. No. Either they just back away from
her.
Yeah,
they just, after... Right. Yeah. So, I mean,
it's like this, it's just this thing where she's like broken as a result of it.
Do you think it would have been more effective if the episode took place over like a year of time and the people had gotten to know the kid? Like you couldn't have the plague problem.
Yeah. But I don't
think it would just because you're still only limited to this 40-minute episode. Like, I'm never going to care about this kid, you know, unless he's there for a season or something and then he dies at the end of the season.
Right. Or unless the kid, his presence there had some kind of impact.
Right.
Or it had some kind of purpose.
Yeah. Or he saved the ship. Well, yeah. He kind of does. He just kills himself.
Yeah, he didn't save the ship. The ship wasn't in danger.
Well, it was while he was there.
It was in danger for 5 seconds.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, that was it. But we never really... There was really no sense of suspense on my part because it was clear.
Or why, I mean, because the alien just leaves because he's like, oh, I'm causing a problem. I should go. What if he had wanted to stick around and Troy has like talk him out of it, you know, and he learns about human sacrifice or something from that. And then he's like, oh, now I'll kill myself. But he does
like,
nothing.
For a radiation life form, he has like a profound understanding of like loyalty and, you know, just like... Yeah, like, I'm putting them in danger. Like, he...
No, right.
It's so weird.
And he learns it as a child when they... Throughout the episode, they're just saying, well, now he understands things as a 4-year-old. When he obviously seems to understand things deeper than that because he's like, I'll let you know why I'm here when the time is right.
Yeah.
So...
Is it implied that he has Beta Zed characteristics?
I think he just copied her. It's half human, half Beta Zoid, like her.
Okay.
So it might be Beta Zed. I think Beta Zed is a planet. Beta Zoid. So it basically just made a copy of her as a guy.
Okay. So that makes sense why he was like, I sense unrest.
Because he is a Beta Zoid at that point.
Okay.
Oh,
and the doctor says that in the room.
Yeah.
She's like, it's an exact half-human, half-Beta Zed.
With a weird-looking baby, though. Strange baby. On a weird birthing chair, too, that they have in the future. You basically...
Yeah, the birthing chair is so medieval-looking.
It has metal stirrups, throws a leg. No pain, no gain.
Yeah, and Data should not take mental notes of that labor because there was nothing normal about that labor whatsoever. That was so, like...
it's the, you know, medical school, like, best case scenario. But I thought the,
No, it wasn't, it didn't make any sense.
Well, I thought Data's portrayal was actually terrible in that birthing scene. He's like insane when he's asking all kinds of questions. It goes on a little bit long, and then he's like smiling weirdly. And he's very excited, and it doesn't make sense with the way the character is supposed to be, that he was so, you know, I can understand him being involved.
He's curious about human experiences. Mm-hmm. I mean, I understand why birth would interest him. But again, the writing is so bad.
Yeah.
That it's just, it's cringy. The whole time I was like my shoulders were up by my ears. Like, when is this episode going to be over? And then when the kid died, I'm just like, is that the end of this episode? This is so dumb. I just feel bad for, yeah.
And it's,
I wonder what Patrick Stewart was thinking as he was acting in this episode.
Just like, this is a disaster. So, I mean, I think it's a horrible episode, but I did want to say that I thought the, Rob Bowman directed this, and Rob Bowman is one of Clay's favorite directors, because he's from X-Files and he did a bunch of other movies and things. And the direction of this episode is actually pretty good. There's a lot of pan shots. There's a lot of moving cameras. There's a lot of, like, well-framed images and everything. And it's a shame because the plot is so stupid. But it actually looks nice, and it looks...
It does look nice.
It kind of has
the Enterprise set is really beautiful. The scenes out of the window are cool.
Yep. They do a lot of that. 10-4 opens that up. And they... it just... I don't know if it's because it's a season premiere and they spend more time on that kind of thing, but it was a very directory... show where they were moving the camera a lot. They were when you have the alien vision, when it's just a handheld camera flying through the hallways.
That was cool when they change a perspective.
Yeah.
Yeah.
There's that. There's a lot of like framing in open doorways of persons standing in the arch of that terminal that Worf stands at, and like Data's behind it and Picard's in front, and it's kind of nicely shot.
Yeah.
So, I mean, the direction is really good. Script is terrible.
Terrible.
Characterization.
Worst Star Trek episode ever.
Yeah, I think it's
worse
up there
than the
for
worst
me.
Season one episode.
Right, and it also has the you'd think in season two they'd be getting better at this, and I understand the writer's strike had a big effect on it, but they really shit the bed with this one.
I just hope females start getting better. It's disappointing.
Ensign Roe comes eventually. Crusher will be okay. Yeah, we'll see. It is kind of weird that they miss the females. And Pulaski has a lot to do in this season, for better or for worse.
But you think so, and Pulaski actually turns out to be interesting?
I don't think she's good, but I think she's interesting. And she has much more characterization than Crusher does.
Okay.
I prefer Crusher, but Crusher is kind of a zero of a character. She doesn't, you couldn't, like, name one thing about Dr. Crusher. Besides that, she's Wesley's mother and she's a doctor.
One thing about her background?
Name a characteristic about her.
She's thoughtful.
Okay. Name one. I mean, I think in this one episode, I can name more characteristics about Pulaski than I could ever come up with for Crusher.
Yeah, I guess you're... I mean, Crusher is pretty one-dimensional.
Yeah.
She is what she is.
And she's sort of defined by her hobbies, because, you know, she's a dancer. You know, it's like stuff
that,
like that.
That just appeared once.
It comes in later, yeah. But so that hasn't been revealed yet. But I mean, I'd be like, Pulaski is sort of defiant of authority. She's kind of crotchety. She's all business. Like, I feel like I can draw her out more than anyone else, even though her character doesn't work in the nice world of Star Trek. You know, where everyone sort of gets along. She's the oddball out.
Mr. Data, when we have a complete list of all the specimens we will be carrying, I want you and Dr.
Pulaski, sir.
Dr. Pulaski, I want you to go through them.
Aye, sir.
By the way, where is our new doctor? She reported in?
Not yet.
Sickbay, this is the captain.
Sickbay, aye.
Is Dr. Pulaski there?
No, sir. The doctor is in 10 forward.
Thank you.
Aye, sir.
You are on board, and already she's found 10 forward.
I'll go get her.
No.
I'll go.
Not the best way to meet your new captain.
Let's get to other critics and what they thought, okay? I don't think we did this with your other episode, but no. I will finish it off. So, Keith DeCandido wrote, "It was remarkable. The episode does a good job." Not that's the quote from the episode. "The episode does a good job of establishing the new status quo, but it does so at the expense of actually telling an interesting story. Troy's pregnancy is treated as a curiosity, but with a surprising lack of urgency from the crew. The child's purpose is provided in a clumsy expository lump by Troy at the last minute. Prior to that, he's a gimmick and not a very interesting one. More tension is provided by the worry about the plague samples and the concern shown by Picard and Riker over transporting it, and later by Data, Delt, I guess that's the Doctor, LaForge, and Pulaski when the plague starts to break containment. Seymour Cassell, LeVar Burton, and Diana Muldaur in particular sell the tension of the ship in danger, one of the few saving graces of the hour." He gave it a 5 out of 10. I think that's a pretty high rating, in my opinion.
Do you want to hear what I'm just? I pulled up the AV Club. Do you have that on?
Yep, with the
Zach Hanlon. I like his. Can I read his last sentence?
Yeah, go ahead.
This made me laugh. So he's talking about the aliens' exit at the end, and summing up the episode. What it translates to is: an alien hitches a ride without permission, rapes a woman, knocks her up, saddles her with grotesque body changes, attaches itself to her post-birth to gain information, endangers everyone on board the ship with its thoughtless selfishness, and then orchestrates an exit in the most emotionally manipulative fashion possible by forcing its quote-unquote mother to witness the death of her child. That's not how it's presented, of course. It's presented as a joyous life experience, but no amount of tears and lies can make this anything less than a travesty. D plus.
Yeah, I don't think you like that one. Read his.
That sums it up perfectly, actually.
Yeah, I mean, it's nice. I like reading the reviews because it's something to dive off of. It is just the script here, I think, is it's trying to like pull your heartstrings, but it's just missing the mark so much, and it makes the alien seem so psychotic and bizarre, and it makes Troy look like an idiot.
It makes what's so annoying is that it totally undermines Troy's character. She's completely underutilized, underrepresented in this whole thing.
I'll just read his Pulaski segment so you can see what you think. Pulaski, on the other hand, or he's going on and talking about how all the changes that have come. Geordi's chief engineer.
Is this the AV Club review?
Yep, Whoopi Goldberg is Guinan. He says, "There's no getting around it. Pulaski's a horrible character and a huge misstep for a fledgling series whose misstep budget is already well into the red. I've crossed my fingers that she'll develop some depth as the season progresses. As others have mentioned, I remember her and Worf having some fun scenes together. But for right now, she's miserable, poorly cast, painfully written, and quite possibly the worst possible choice to replace the smart, passionate, and sensible Beverly Crusher.
Okay.
Muldaur isn't a terrible actress. She's more professional than Crosby was, and there's none of that off-putting skittishness. The problem is her persona is detached, icy, and aloof, and we're given no reason to think there's anything underlying all her condescension." Just true.
That is true. I mean, you seem to have a higher opinion of her. I'm anxious to see how her coldness kind of plays out and whether it actually helps her make some good moves.
Right.
Like, if something were to happen on the ship, like, are those qualities useful?
Right.
In that situation.
Yeah.
And I would like the idea of someone kind of going up against Picard.
Yeah.
Because whenever Crusher and Picard went up against each other, there's so much sexual tension between them that you know it's just
right.
That
yeah,
it doesn't ever really mean anything. She's always just going to acquiesce to him.
Yeah, they'll always agree
at some point.
She's never going to push the limit with him at a certain point. So
yeah,
that's it. That's the child. Season 2 has started with a whimper, just like season 1 ended with a whimper. This one gets a 1 out of 5 from me. It's probably one of the worst Star Trek Next Generation episodes.
Is it a 1 because of the puppies?
No, I can't go any lower than a 1. Only 1 to 5. I was thinking about giving it, or I was wondering, because there's another episode in this season that is horrible. Might be the worst, but it's bad for a different reason. I give this one a 1 out of 5. Not very good. Season 2 is off to a weird start where everyone's in the right position, but the script is terrible to bring us there. Things pick up in season 2, I'm fairly sure, so I'm looking forward to that. But what did you think? What would you give it?
Yeah, lowest rating.
Lowest possible.
Yeah.
1 out of 5 then for you. Yeah, I think we're on the same page.
Yeah, it was really bad.
It was.
Enjoy this episode, everyone.
Cool. Well, thank you, lady, for coming on again.
Oh, no problem. Good
and
to be here.
Thank you, everybody, for listening. And just before we go, if you're listening on YouTube and you enjoy the content, a like and a comment would be appreciated. If you enjoyed it and you're listening on iTunes, a review and a rating is much appreciated. Thanks very much, guys, for listening. And we will see you next time with... Help me out here. What's the name of the next episode?
Oh, you're asking me?
Oh, I can't tell. Oh, Where Silence Has Lease. Where Silence Has Lease. I think there's an alien cloud in that one or something. So, season 2 does not really start great, but Where Silence Has Lease, we will be back. Thank you again, and we will see you later.
Bye, guys.